Yes, an American classic, and part of why that movie is such a classic is because it represents so many of our default attitude towards work. And so we're in this series called How to Love Your Job, and we're trying to redeem the value of work and how it really brings satisfaction. And not necessarily about how to exactly love what you're doing right now, but maybe as much to reclaim the value of work in and of itself. So we're going to continue on that with week two today. And let's pray before I go any further. Father, thank you for today. And thank you for the amazing things you're doing around. You're doing a lot. You're doing a lot inside of the seats here and inside of seats in Florence and Mason and inside of homes and businesses represented in this place. So I pray that today you would give us something we can use. We could use a fresh touch from you. We could use fresh insight from you. And I pray that you would use my effort, my work right now to bring that to pass. And I pray that, most importantly, that what I say pleases you and is in alignment with your truth. And I pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, you know, last week we looked at the idea that work is valuable in and of itself. I mean, God works in the Bible. So it's valued, and he gets men and women to work before anything goes wrong in the Bible. It's important. And so I know coming out of last week, if you didn't catch it, you can catch it online. A lot of people were saying, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, good stuff, but man, why do I just not like what I do? Why don't I like my job? And so what I want to do today is do a little troubleshooting for you. A number of years ago, 2 years or so ago, I went on Craigslist. I found a used motorcycle I want down in North Carolina. So the day after Thanksgiving, we hopped in the pickup truck, cruised on down there, and on the way down, the guy calls me. He says, hey, bad news and good news. The bad news is the battery is dead. The bike won't start, but the good news is I got a line on a brand new one. I'm also going to include a brand new battery for the bike. I thought, great, awesome. Get down there, and the guy's sweating. He's fiddling around underneath the tank with the battery, and the bike won't start. So we try helping him. We try jumping it. It doesn't work. We take it outside. We push start it. Finally, as we're push starting it, it kicks over. And he's thinking, maybe if I can just get this going and ride for a while, I'll blow the carbon out of the cylinders, and everything will be fine. So we think, good. So he takes off. And about 5 minutes later, we're thinking, he's not back yet. I mean, what if he broke down? We have no idea where he went. So we get in the truck, we try to find him. Sure enough, we see him pushing the bike back to his house. We help him get the bike back. I'm looking at the bike. It looks beautiful. It looks really good, good shape. And so I'm thinking there's probably something somewhat simple that's wrong with the bike, but I don't know. I don't know much about these bikes. I can't figure it out. So I say to him, how much of a discount you give me for a motorcycle that I've never seen run? And he knocks, I don't know, what, $700 off a thing or something. I said, done, sold. So he pushed the motorcycle up the back of the pickup truck, drove another 10 miles home. And the next day, I got it to a local mechanic. I didn't understand how this bike worked. And the guy looks underneath the tank where the battery was, and he just takes a cable, a throttle cable that was dislodged, it was unseated. He puts the throttle cable back in its seat, and boom, the bike fires up. It's perfect. That was the best $700 I've ever heard in my life. In fact, now before I buy things, I send somebody over to terrorize it and vandalize it so I can get cheaper. See, I didn't know what I was doing, but the mechanic, he could troubleshoot. This is what happens. When something is in trouble, mechanically, you shoot at different things until you knock it down and say, ah, that's it. So today, I want to shoot at some different things and try to dissect whether or not this is the issue that you and I might have with work or with our specific job. And you might not get these things solved today. Some of these things may be as simple for you as adjusting a throttle cable. Others are going to be, man, something massive. My rings are blown or something like that. And you're going to have to do some more work. So this is more, here's some things to look at versus let me solve all of your problems. God, in the book of Genesis chapter 2, it says this, but the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. So day one, he works. Day two, day three, day four, all these periods of time, he works, he works, he works. Day six, human beings are created. And then on day seven, after God has created, he's worked, it says he rests from his work. It's almost like we get the picture of God going, whew, oh, man, I'm tired. All that creating, whew, oh, I got to catch my breath. I need another day. No, it's not. God never gets tired. He never grows weary. He doesn't. He has unending resources. But God is a great leader. He always models for us what he expects from us. And he models what it looks like to have a healthy rhythm of rest. Now, interesting that human beings were created on the sixth day, and our very first day, we're ready to go, and the gun goes off and we do nothing. We rest. The very first day. There's something in here for us. How to love your job? Rest to work instead of resting from work. There's something in the area of rest that oftentimes keeps us from really being fulfilled in our jobs. We can't go into the work week just barely having enough energy to go into the work week, barely surviving our partying over the weekend, barely recuperating from the previous week. We have to get to a place where not where we earn rest. That's the way we tend to function in our society. I work really hard and then I've earned a break. I work really hard and I earn a vacation. No, it's not that. It's our rest doesn't just recuperate us from where we are. Our rest sets us up for amazing energy burst. So I don't know what this looks like for you in terms of your work schedule. I know that God has some amazingly intense things that he said to people in the Bible. But if you don't take a Sabbath, if you don't rest, I am not happy. Amazingly intense. Now, I don't know what this means to your rhythm. I'm telling you. If you can't identify definitive periods of time, weekly, monthly, annually, when you are resting in order to work, you're just not going to cut it. You'll just keep going through the motions. We need to get these energy bursts. Second thing I look at is grunting, not glory. To love your job, grunt, don't look for glory. When I was in construction, I had this boss who would define all work as cheese work or glory work and grunt work. Glory work or cheese work was the work that you would do that was easy, you were clean when you did it, and everyone would see it. He called me and said, boy, I'm going to get, boy. I said, boy. He wasn't necessarily like that, but he called me boy. He said, boy, I'm going to give you some glory work today. I said, what's glory work? He said, I want you to go in and put that trim, that base trim on. It was glory work because you stayed clean while you did it. It was in a nice air-conditioned environment. And when you were done, you looked at it and said, oh, that's good. It's glory work. But normally, I was doing grunt work. I was in the back loading the dumpster. Grunt work and glory work. And part of the issue that we have with work is we all trend towards the glory work. We want the stuff that's clean. We want the stuff that's easy. We want the stuff that looks good. We want the stuff that gets immediate gratification. Right now, this form of my job I'm doing right now, this is, in a sense, glory work. I mean, I'm not sweating right now. I'm getting some sense of gratification, feedback. But this is but the grunt happens Monday morning. The grunt goes in when I start brand new all over again. The grunt goes in where I just got to grunt it out appropriately. I've got to grunt out. I got to figure out what to say. I've got to read. I've got to spend time in solitude. I've got to be silent. I've got to a wordsmith. I've got to practice what I'm going to say in front of people, in front of an empty room, and people feedback. That's all grunt work that goes on behind the scenes. And I promise you, I don't know what your job is. White collar, blue collar, stay-at-home parent, teachers, whatever. I promise you on a daily basis there's decisions that you will make of whether or not to do the nice thing that people will affirm you for or do the grunt work that really needs to get done that later on can have an impact. In the book of 1 Thessalonians, chapter 3, verse 7 and 12, it says this, "For you yourselves know how you ought to imitate us, because we were not idle when we were with you. Nor do we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with toil and labor, we worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. It was not because we do not have that right, but to give you in ourselves an example to imitate, an example of grunt work. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command, if anyone's not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busy bodies. Now, such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and to earn their own living." Now, certainly, this passage has some application to how the government structures itself. We're not going there today. We're talking about how we structure our own lives. It's interesting. He says here that you can actually be at work but not be busy, instead be a busy body. You can actually be at work and not be grunting, not be doing some of the difficult things. What's that look like? It looks like if your employer expects you to be there from 9 to 5, you're doing Farmville from 9 to 5. That is being a busybody. That's being a busybody. It means even your employer, if your employer expects you to be there from, you know, 7 to 3, 7 to 1, what, I don't know what your, you choose to go to the water cooler and talk about Jesus. Don't go to the water cooler and talk about Jesus. Someone's paying you to do a job. Do your job. Do it during lunch hour afterwards, something like that. Oh, it's God's stuff. No, you're there to work. Don't be a busybody. Don't be idle. Don't try to fake that your spirituality is keeping you from work. I mean, I could go on and on about different ways that we substitute things. And part of the reason why our jobs aren't satisfying is if you don't do the grunt work, the real glory work never comes. Most of us, we just want the fun stuff. We want the good stuff. And this is part of why shows on television that are really odd things like, you know, deep sea fishing or, you know, all these shows where people have these really weird things are mesmerizing to many of us. One of the more interesting shows of our time is Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe. Fascinating show, at least when it started. It's kind of getting old. But nonetheless, the concept is fascinating. Actually, he's a pretty bright, intelligent guy, very much so. I saw a talk by him, a TED Talk recently, and I thought you might benefit from seeing some of these snippets. Check them out.
People with dirty jobs are happier than you think. As a group, they're the happiest people I know. And I don't want to start whistling, look for the union label and all that happy worker crap. I'm just telling you that these are balanced people who do unthinkable work. Roadkill picker-uppers whistle while they work. They've got this amazing sort of symmetry to their life. And I see it over and over and over again. So I started to wonder what would happen if we challenge some of these sacred cows. Follow your passion. We've been talking about it here, you know, for the last 36 hours. Follow your passion. What could possibly be wrong with that? It's probably the worst advice I ever got, you know? You know, follow your dreams and go broke, right? I mean, that's all I heard growing up. I didn't know what to do with my life, but I was told if you follow your passion, it's going to work out. I can give you 30 examples right now. Bob Combs, the pig farmer in Las Vegas, who collects the uneaten scraps of food from the casinos and feeds them to his swine. Why? Because there's so much protein in the stuff we don't eat. His pigs grow at twice the normal speed, and he is one rich pig farmer, and he is good for the environment, and he spends his days doing this incredible service, and he smells like hell, but God bless him. He's making a great living. You ask him, did you follow your passion here? He'd laugh at you. You know, the guy's worth... He just got offered like $60 million for his farm and turned it down outside of Vegas. He didn't follow his passion. He stepped back and he watched where everybody was going, and he went the other way, you know? And I hear that story over and over. Matt Freund, a dairy farmer in New Canaan, Connecticut, who woke up one day and realized the crap from his cows was worth more than their milk if he could use it to make these biodegradable flower pots. Now he's selling them to Walmart, right? He follow his passion. The guy's, come on, you know? So I started to look at passion. I started to look at efficiency versus effectiveness, as Tim talked about earlier. That's a huge distinction. I started to look at teamwork and determination and basically all those platitudes they call successories that hang with that schmaltzy art in boardrooms around the world right now. That stuff, it's suddenly all been turned on its head. But what it all comes down to is this. I have formed a theory, and I'm going to share it now in my remaining 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It goes like this. We've declared war on work as a society, all of us. It's a civil war. It's a cold war, really. We didn't set out to do it, and we didn't twist our mustache in some Machiavellian way, but we've done it. And we have waged this war on at least four fronts, certainly in Hollywood. The way we portray working people on TV, it's laughable. If there's a plumber, he's 300 pounds and he's got a giant butt crack, admit it. You've seen him all the time. That's what plumbers look like, right? We turn them into heroes or we turn them into punchlines. That's what TV does. We try hard on dirty jobs not to do that, which is why I do the work and I don't cheat. But we've waged this war on Madison Avenue. I mean, so many of the commercials that come out there in the way of a message, what's really being said? Your life would be better if you could work a little less, if you didn't have to work so hard, if you could get home a little earlier, if you could retire a little faster, if you could punch out a little sooner. It's all in there, over and over again and again. So we're thinking, by we, I mean me, that the thing to do is to talk about a PR campaign for work. Manual labor, skilled labor. Somebody needs to be out there talking about the forgotten benefits I'm talking about grandfather stuff, the stuff a lot of us probably grew up with, but we've kind of lost.
We don't have to all have blue-collar jobs in order to, you know, apply that. There are elements, whatever your job are, you know what they are. You just go, gosh, I really don't want to do this. I got to do this again. It's not enjoyable. It's not. People aren't going to notice it. You're not going. It's just you hit your marks. We all have these things. We all do. When I go and read my Bible in the morning, which isn't part of my job, but it's something. It's a good discipline. I go there out of grunt. I do. It's like I need to do it. And I oftentimes come out and I'm going, phew, that was really good. But I go in, and if you part of the reason why we don't read our Bibles and pray is because we don't feel glorified when we do it. It's not easy. But then we don't get anything in the back end with it. I got 10 standing meetings every week. I don't go into those meetings excited about being there, but I know, but I don't do the grunt work of showing up at meetings on time and doing what I need to do. There won't be anything else on the back end. I did a funeral. Just came back. My cousin, really good, godly man. He weirdest thing. He caught. I say caught. It was like it. He came down with bipolar. It was like he caught the flu. He came down with bipolar. Never had any signs at all. Went manic, depressive, and then killed himself. And I went and did the funeral. I normally wouldn't have gone because it was right mashed up against this weekend. I had to get a 3:45 a.m. flight to get back here this weekend to be able to do what I needed to do. And I'll tell you what, the funerals I tend to do, which I don't do many of them because a lot of other staff members do them, but the ones I do, they're always the worst. I'll tell you what, until you've had to go and do a funeral for suicide or a child who's died, there is a form of grunt work I can't describe. Yes, God wants me there. Yes, there's something about being... I tell you what, I am never excited to do that. It is work, dealing with those emotions. And whatever your job is, I promise you, if you could just reformat the things that you have and see it that way, things would change. Jesus modeled this for us. Jesus was in glory. The Bible says very clearly, he was in glory before the world was ever created. And then he comes through Mary's birth canal into the working poor. He grunts it out as a normal person growing in wisdom and stature. He's always God, but he's going through the human experience and going through the grunt work of all that as a carpenter and all those things. God, again, models that for us, and yet we are so prone to only want the easy, only want the simple, only what people are going to give us. You know, my wife is an amazing stay-at-home parent. We have a somewhat traditional home. She stays home, she works in the home, and she does work. I oftentimes get a little bothered by how she works. Like I think she works too hard, especially she works too hard to serve our kids. I get bothered when she constantly does their laundry and folds it, and they actually come home and drop off the laundry, and she like actually does it. I'm like, what are you doing, woman? Are you crazy? You're ruining their future spouses. Their future spouses will never measure up to you, ever. What are you thinking? But nonetheless, I love the heart behind it because, see, for me, I'm kind of actually bitter. I'm jealous because I was doing my laundry when I was 13, 14 years old. My mom said, no more laundry for you. So I've been doing that sort of grunt work. I'll tell you what, when you're 13, 14, 15, you got to do your own laundry into college. You just don't enjoy it, and you don't want to buy all that many underwear, so you got to stretch out your underwear. And you learn ways to do that I won't go into right now. You learn ways to do that, right? So honestly, to this day, married almost 25 years, to this day, I get up in the morning, oh gosh, I get some clothes on, and I start thinking, oh man, I wonder what's in my drawer, underwear. I still think the underwear, what kind of, and I go and open up that drawer, underwear! Underwear magically appeared in my drawer. Where's the angelic voices again? Oh, yes, beautiful underwear, who would do such a thing? My amazing wife. Now, that's grunt work for her. That's grunt work. It really is. It's grunt work to take an employee through a review and be prepared for it. It's grunt work to evaluate a company before you buy a piece. It's grunt work. I mean, I can just go on and on with it. It's grunt work to prepare the lesson plan before you actually teach. Gary Sinise, actor, I love what he says. He says, careers like rockets don't always take off on schedule. The key is to keep working on the engines. The grunt work is the engine of our career that many of us have devalued. So I'm saying if that's an issue, okay, there it goes. Work on that. Another one is love your job by valuing people more than projects. Value people more than projects. This was a big issue I had early in the days of CrossFit. It's still something I struggle with, but especially in the early days, I got really out of whack with this. You know, I'll get into how the church is growing, got to add this service, got to find this staff person, we've got to do this campaign, and all these projects. And then you forget, hold on, I'm not here for projects. I'm here for people. That's what I'm here for. I'm here for people, not projects. And this doesn't matter if your job is like mine or your job is in corporate America. You have to figure out how to look at your work from a people standpoint and not a project standpoint. I mean, if you're working at GE, yes, you're creating engines, all that kind of stuff. You got to figure out, okay, but I have people I'm working with. How can I build into them and show them value while I'm working? And also seeing that because I'm building this engine, people will be able to get to funerals far away and get back. Whatever it is, you've got to be able to see how your work is building into people, not projects. See, God never died for a project. He died for people. That's what he died for. He died for people. And if our work becomes purely about the task, something will be lost. Jesus says in John 4:34, he says, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Do you not say, 'There are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest?' Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest." Jesus says, here's what I enjoy. I love doing the work that is God's work. That's what I love. I'm all about that. He says this in a number of different times, and sometimes he looks out over a bunch of people, and he says to his father, "Hey, look at all these people. Look at all these people. Man, the harvest is ripe, but the workers," he says another time, "are few. The workers are few." Jesus gets excited about work, and he gets excited when we can connect our work to building value in people's lives. Now, one of the ways that we have the opportunity to work is sometimes we work and we don't get a paycheck. It's called volunteering. And I'll tell you what, around CrossRoads, we are seeing right now that the harvest is plentiful. I don't know if you got the email list last week or if you trashed it, but we sent an email to everyone who we had in our database. And the Florence launch last week was pretty freaking amazing. We were hoping for 1,500 people the very first week and expecting attendance to go down a bit in Oakley as people kind of stay over close where they were. We had 1,500 people in the very first service at Florence last week. We had a total attendance in Florence of 3,300 people. 3,300. And attendance in Oakley and Mason was up. I tell you, I've been around a lot of churches. I've been around a lot of things. I've never known of any church that's grown by over 3,000 people in one day. I know when I've read in the Bible, it's been the Bible. I mean, those kind of, God added 3,000 to miss, those kind of things. Amazing. I'll just say, you know, if you're running around, you're in something that is very rare. And sometimes we get numb by it. You're in something that is very, very rare. Not that people are filling buildings, it's that God is filling people. Because that's what he is more concerned with than anything else, is people. And so I just want to resensitize you that, man, we always need workers around here. Workers who want to build into kids, workers who want to do coffee, workers that have other things, workers that want to park objects. I just have you consider that the harvest right now is plentiful, and the workers are few. And this applies to all of our, find how people are impacted by our job. Some of us, we have a hard time with our job because we need to learn to focus on now. Love your job by focusing on now instead of focusing on next. You know, our whole life we're conditioned to look for the next. We're in junior high, next, I gotta get to high school. We're in high school, next, I gotta get to college. We're going, gotta get my first job. And then we keep carrying on. We're in this job, and what's the step to my next job? What's the lateral move I can make so that I can get that jump? And we're looking to the next. What's the next promotion? What's my critical path? What's all my career planning on? And there's a form of that that's okay, but here's the thing. Some of us are so focused on the next that we can't experience God and the work in our now. Now, God has created us for the job that we're in now. Some of the most successful people I've interacted with have told me things like, man, I've never looked for a job. I've always been focused and fruitful in the job I have, and jobs keep coming. Opportunities keep coming. Focus on where you are now, not on what could happen next. Do you remember Michael Phelps in the Olympics recently? He started off and he had his first race, and he came in fourth place. His second race, he got a silver medal, and people thought that it was the kind of race he would have won in previous years. After the Olympics, and after he had gotten all those gold medals, the most decorated athlete in the history of the world, Bob Costas asked him, he said, you know, what were you thinking after those first two races? And he said, I got what I trained for. I got what I trained for. Meaning, he started his training late, and as a result of that, he really didn't do all that well. And what he was also saying was, I'm really my best when I'm just focused on training. I mean, when you're training, you're not thinking gold medal. When he trains, he's not thinking gold medal. Maybe that's what gets him into the water because he wants that fruit. But what he's thinking when he's in the water is the next stroke. He actually counts the strokes. That's why he won one of his races. I think it was last Olympics. When his goggles filled up with water, he swam blind. And he counted his strokes until he made his next flip turn because he'd always been in the now while he was training. Tell your job, there will always be temptations to fantasize about the next thing. Where am I going? But man, where you are right now, focus on your lesson plan now. Focus on the performance review now. Focus on that fitting now. Focus on the current sales call you're on, not the regional thing. No, now. Focus on it now. And if we're not focused on now, our work will just be constant stepping stones and we'll never get the kind of fruit that we want to experience, which is the next one. Enjoy fruit more than frivolity. Enjoy fruit more than frivolity. I think one of the reasons why gaming is so popular, especially amongst young males, is that it's a microcosm of the way work should work and the way work does work. Meaning, if you focus on the now, if you do this thing right now, put some time, you're going to get rewarded with another level, right? You put focused time in this, and, you know, in Call of Duty, you're going to get 10th prestige. You know, eventually, you do the work, and boom, this happens. And what we do, we need to look at that in the micro, in the macro with our jobs. We go into our jobs, and oftentimes, we're just constantly working for the weekend. I'm looking forward to what I can do after work. I can't wait for this. We're interested in the frivolous things that we can do in life, instead of being focused on the fruit of what an amazing workday could provide for us. The Bible says this in 1 Timothy 2:6. It is the hardworking farmer who ought to have the first share of the crops. The Bible actually draws from the work world and affirms it, and it actually applies to the spiritual realm. But it says, why does a farmer go out and do the grunt work every day of planting, of breaking up the soil, of weeding? Why does he? Because he wants the fruit. He's fruit-focused, and he should. He should. The hardworking farmer should taste the fruits of their labor. And it's a shift to not have little cheap candy fruit on a daily basis that isn't tied to our labor and think long-term. As I mentioned last week, you should be financially motivated. You should be. I mean, if you're not financially motivated, we're what you call a slacker. You're just, you know, I'm not saying it's the primary motivation. It's not my primary motivation. And there's other motivations too, motivations to make the world a better place, to build into people. But there should be a level of noticing that if you work on it, you will have opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise. You will have things that are going to taste good. And some of the fruit isn't just financial either. It's the fruit of being able to provide for a family. It's the fruit of being able to take a dream vacation that you couldn't have afforded otherwise. The Bible affirms these things. It says, man, enjoy the fruit of your labors as we looked at last week, but you can't be frivolously focused trying to figure out how to put in the least amount of time this week. Trying to figure out how to clock out early, trying to squeeze in when the boss hasn't looked and I'm kind of there 2 minutes later than I should be. To be actually fruit-focused. You know, our country tells us all kinds of lies. All kinds of lies. Like, sex between two consenting adults never has anybody get hurt. It does. Most of us have experienced it. No, you do. You do. Another lie is, you know, you can work 40 hours a week. Starting when you're 22, you can work 40 hours a week and put 5% in an IRA and then retire when you're 55, and you can live the same lifestyle for another 30 years. That's a lie. I'm just going to kind of work this, and I'm going to save, and between that and maybe a pension and the government, you know, we're going to kick save it here. I'm going to be able to have the exact same lifestyle for the last 30 years of my life. No, that's ridiculous. No. You will not be able to have. That's part of why people are crushed right now. They bought the lie that was possible, and now it's not. It's not. The hardworking farmer never assumes that. He says, man, I'm not assuming something is going to go okay with my crop. I'm going to work hard, not because I have a work ethic, Jess, but because I like the fruit. Fruit-focused versus frivolity. Last one. Make Jesus your identity instead of your job. Part of the reason why the economy has been so crushing for us has not just been financially, but it's because we lost a job, and that job was our identity. That job is who we were. I mean, isn't this true? We go into parties. What happens when we interact with somebody at a party? First question, hey, what's your name? Oh, I'm so-and-so. Oh, where are you from? And then what's the next question? What do you do for a living, right? What do you do for a living? And why are we asking what they do for a living? It's not just because we don't know what else to ask, but we're trying to figure them out, right? So once I find out what you do for a living, then I've figured you out. This is why I don't ask people what they do for a living, because then they're going to ask me. And I know if I've just met them, they're going to get a picture of me. It's not going to be very good. So if they say, what do you do for a living? I mean, if I say, I'm a Bible preacher in a mega church, that would just like all of a sudden they'll go, oh, got it. Okay, I understand you. You fleece the flock and wear polyester. I understand you. I got you in the box, right? And we do this. So what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a stockbroker. Oh, one percenter, detached from reality. Got it. Went through this. Understand it. Got it. What do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a stay-at-home parent. Oh, checked out from reality. Can't make it in the real world. I understand you. Got it. What do you do for a living? I'm a school teacher. Teacher union, taking the country down. Got it. I understand you. What do you do for a living? I'm a social worker. Oh, bleeding heart liberal. I got it. Whatever it is, I mean, I could go on. All of us, we form some idea of somebody because we really believe that what your job is who you are. And it's why when we lose our job, for many of us, that's become our identity. And many of us, we work insane amount of hours, and it isn't because we're good grunt workers. It isn't because we want just the fruit that comes from that. It's because it's our identity. It's who we are. We can't, when we're away from work, we don't really know how to process ourselves. It's why when somebody else gets the promotion, we're crushed. Oh. When somebody gets ranked ahead of us in sales, we're crushed. Because these things are our identity. It's more than good goals to have. They actually go to the core of who we are. And when you come to a place where your identity is Jesus, where He's your identity, where He tells you who you are, your work will be in a danger zone. Here's what Jesus says in John 5:17. He says, my Father is working until now, and I am working. My Father's working until now, and I'm working. He says, so right now, God's still working. He's still working, and right now, I am working. I'm working. Right now, I'm working. But what's His identity? It starts with His Father. My Father, that is His identity. His identity isn't carpenter. His identity isn't Jew. His identity isn't miracle worker. His main way He views Himself is He is God's. He has value. You know, what's the value of anything, right? So it's what someone's willing to pay for it. We're looking for a used car right now. I've been trying to figure that we are. Car has 3 oil leaks on, 195,000 miles. It's our main car, so we're trying to find a new one. And, you know, it's maddening, right, to go out and find out what's the right car, find out what the price is. And, you know, you go on and do the Kelley Blue Book, all that stuff. There's a limit, really. What's a car worth? It's whatever somebody else is going to pay for it that I got to match it, right? That's always what something is worth, what somebody will pay for it. And so what is your worth? It's what God's paid for you. He's paid His Son for you. He took His Son, put Him on a cross, and He took all of the sins that you committed, put them on His back, and He asked if you will receive that forgiveness, if you will receive it. And if you do, your identity is no longer a corporate employee. Your identity is no longer a good dad. Your identity is Son of the Father. Your identity is Jesus. That's your. And when you get that, oh my goodness, your best work days are ahead. Your best ones. The workaholism will just take care of itself. And actually, the bad work ethic, that'll also take care of itself. The hard conversations at work, those take, because you'll go in and have them, because if someone doesn't like what you say or they're crushed, you're going to do it in such a way that you're okay because God approves of you. You're doing His work, and you're okay to have that hard. You're okay to actually go into the meeting and report a bad sales forecast and not spin it because that's not who you are. You're okay to live with where it is. It's not the beginning and ending of your world. Now, I told you a lot of these things. Some of you go, oh, that's me. Got it. I'm going to work on that one. Others of us, yeah, that's it. Oh, man, I have no idea. I'm troubleshooting today. I'm not fixing you. I'm not solving your problems. But these are most likely the wires that are loose, the parts that are missing, that's keeping your work engine from having joy. It's keeping you from actually being fruitful. And I know right now, like, now's the time where I should have some real heart-rending, you know, emotional close. And, oh, it's awesome. Don't have that. Sorry. I'm kind of the mechanic that said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's your problem right there. Do you want to pay for it? You want me to do the work? You want to do, you know, that's kind of where I am. I just wanted to serve you this way. But the best way, the best thing is to say, hey, you really have value. When you come to understand your identity or your potential identity, things start to change. Why is it that we did that song earlier, which we're going to do again right now, when Josh was hitting on those drums in that one song? What is it that really struck something? It's because that's a job of his, and he was drumming out of his identity as a child of God. He was drumming, and it struck something primal inside of us. And in fact, you can balance the books out of your identity, and that be primal for you. You can fold laundry. You can teach a lesson and have it be more than just a lesson, but actually be something that's flowing forward from your identity. Father, I pray that you would help us make the proper application tomorrow at work or this afternoon at work. Thank you that you think of us in ways that we wouldn't ever think of others. You think more highly of us when you have the highest standards. You think more highly of us and give us more grace than other people that we give grace to or that we don't give grace to. Thanks for being beyond. Hear these words. Amen.